I wanted a chance to talk about this idea of vertical habits. I consider it to be a universal design for language that you can use in worship with a lot of responsive design possibilities. So as you can tell, this is building a bridge into where we're going to land for the next section of our course in that personalized responsive design section. But I really wanted us to think about the opportunity that we have with vertical habits. And so a little bit of introduction to that. Vertical Habits was an initiative that was formed through a grant project from the Calvin Institute of Christian Worship. And it was put together because the language of the church where it was used was so difficult for people to understand. And they said, look, we have a lot of visitors, people who've never been to a church before, and we're asking them to enter into the prayer of illumination. They have no clue what that means. We're using a foreign language. Can we take the language of worship and put it into some terms that make sense for many people? Well, it was exciting to me, and as you'll see in just a moment, this language of worship is so accessible to so many ages and so many people at different developmental levels as well. So I think this has great possibility in our congregations, and I wanted to spend enough time and give you enough examples that you leave excited to think about and try vertical habits. So here we go. I just can introduce it best by thinking about preschool. And as you know, I spend a lot of time at preschool in Zealand Christian. The teachers spend a ton of time all summer getting ready for preschool. And they've got their shelves all labeled and the toys are all neat. And it takes kids about 10 minutes to trash the place when they get there. You know, it's just this chaos of kids. But I will tell you, in preschool, I am so impressed with teachers because I believe they are some of the best language instructors that you will ever meet. So let me just give this example. Mrs. Baker brings in a treat. The teacher says, let's say, thank you, Mrs. Baker. And all the little kids go, thank you, Mrs. Baker. And then, you know, the next day, Mrs. Hernandez brings in the treat. Let's say thank you. So again, this repeated idea of saying thank you, but also when do you say thank you? It's a way of forming gratitude in the hearts of preschoolers. When do you express it, and how do you do that? But also, there are other opportunities in a preschool to step in, certainly with the words, I'm sorry. So, you know, the kiddo at the top of the slide smashes into the kiddo at the bottom of the slide. The teacher hustles over there and say, oh, you need to say sorry to Kai. And so she goes, sorry, Kai, you know, and then the kiddo's over there and smashes down the other kid's blocks. And it's like, oh, the teacher runs over and say, you need to say sorry to Malik. And so they do, you know, so the list goes on and on. This teacher's always inserting, let's say thank you, let's say sorry, and modeling language. I think one of the most amazing days for me came, and I know it was around Thanksgiving time, because there was this child who had, they were painting turkeys, and so they had their handprints ready, and this kiddo had turkeys all over his paper, but noticed that the child next to him had a lot of white spots, and so took this painted turkey and slammed down his hand on the child's paper next to him. Without the teacher coming over, without that prompt, he realized what he had done. Sorry formed in his heart, and he took the kiddo next to him and said, I'm sorry. I would contend that the teacher should have thrown herself a party that night because her mission accomplished. She not only taught the child remorse and that idea of when we say sorry, but how to do it and how to do it appropriately. It's this beautiful language model via preschool style. I would say then vertical habits would contend that worship is actually one of those places where there's language instruction happening. Preschool is language instruction for them, but it's language instruction for life. Worship is language instruction for now, but it's also language instruction for life. So again, as we practice that, we get together and we're saying, God, thank you for what you've done, right? It's something that we can speak out. Love this quote by Dr. Thomas Long, and it goes like this. The way we talk in worship affects the way we talk in the rest of our lives. And vice versa. The words of worship are like stones thrown into the pond. They ripple outward in countless concentric circles, finding ever fresh expression in new places in our lives. Worship is a key element in the church's language school for life. It's a provocative idea. Worship as a soundtrack for the rest of life. The words and music and actions of worship inside the sanctuary, playing the background as we live our lives outside in the world. What a great quote. What a great parallel to preschool. We practice these words. We practice these habits of saying these words to God in worship. And these words extend with us out into life. We not only ask God for help here, but as we're passing that ambulance by the road, as we're going down into a different day, not Sunday, not Sabbath, but it's Tuesday, and yet we know somebody's hurt, and our first words out of our mouth are the ones we practiced in worship, saying, God, help. So again, this is a pretty powerful concept. And I guess I would also like to equate this with another opportunity to think broadly about worship. So would you just play with me a minute? Let's just imagine, and I don't know what sport is big in your community, but let's just imagine that you are in a community where you've been to the best sporting event that your town or state holds. And you scream so loud, it's like such a close game, and you were like the best fan ever. They put the TV cameras on you because you were so into this, right? And after that particular event, the next day you were going to a worship service, and you had no voice. You couldn't sing, you couldn't speak. How would that alter your interaction with a typical worship service in your area? Would that change some things? Would it change the way that you experience that? How you could participate in that service? Imagine that. Just imagine what could you actually do as part of the worship service if you could not sing and you could not speak. What if that were true for you every week? What if every week that was your experience because you did not have words that you could speak or words that you could sing? What participation points would you have in worship on a continuing basis? So I would say that Vertical Habits gives us a chance to think about how do we look at words within a worship service that allow us to form habits of conversation with God that we take ripple out into our lives, but also is this sort of common denominator language that everybody can participate in. It's something that we would teach a very young child to say, but we're practicing it in the context of worship. And as I talk this through, again, think through those that might be new to the church. Would these words make more sense? So often in a worship service, we might say, oh, it's time for adoration. Let's sing these songs of adoration and praise. Really? Because what are we really saying to God? Love you, right? I love you, God. How young is a child when we teach them those words? Love you. Oh, I said it to my children so many times, and the gift of when that little boy from his bed when he was young looked at me and said, love you, Mommy. Right? Again, practicing those habits, but we're doing this with God. We call it a time of confession, but what are we really saying? Sorry. And it's something we can sign. It's a word we learn early, like that preschool teacher was teaching. It's a word that people know. A time of lament. Oh, how important it is to have opportunities to lament as a congregation. But what are we asking God? Why? Why, God? Prayer for illumination, or can we say, now it's time for us to listen. I'm listening. Petition, chance to ask for help. thanksgiving and gratitude, again, a time to say thank you to God, a time of service, right? We're asking God, what can I do? What can I do now? I've heard your word. What can I do? And a time of blessing, not only as a congregation, but blessing God. And so here again, if you look on this side, these words are so accessible. These are words we teach very young children. These are words that make sense to most people and aren't couched in these big church language that can sometimes be not accessible to some. I guess what I loved so much about this, not only for that visitor, not only for that thought of, wow, as I practice saying thank you to God in this worship service, when I see that sunrise and it's so beautiful and it's this now, this vertical, this me and God habit of saying thank you to God for those things. What a gift that is. So I want to just take this apart a little bit. Because as we think about different vertical habits, well, there are things that we can draw a picture of. It might be an icon. Maybe those are the visuals you can put in the bulletin beside those pieces, right? And clearly, before we go too much farther, you know that this is more of our wording to God, not necessarily God's words to us in a service. So I want to delineate that there are different kinds of words, and sometimes there are words to one another, but we're really focusing on our participation and our words to God. So, love you is something that we can say it, we can sign it, we can make a banner about it. We can learn it in a variety of languages, right? So there are opportunities within this. And vertical habits are all rooted in the Psalms. And so each one of these words comes from the Psalms. Saying I love you to God is on each heart, not only on the hearts of those who have a voice to speak it. So what could we do if we wanted to say love you to God? All right. Well, and words were not our thing. Certainly there are some things that make some sense, and I've showed you some things. We can have flags. We can have things to wave. We can have shaky eggs that are part of that experience that don't have to all rely on singing the words. I did bring up this break ticket that I introduced in the children's setting, partly because there are some people for whom loud praise can be difficult to maintain. And so sometimes we need to provide people a ticket out of there for a short break. And so sometimes, literally, I know a family where they had an individual with them, and they had 4 break tickets taped on the chair or the pew in front of them. And this person, as the need arose, could sense his body needed a break. He just pulled one and left. So he had 4 chances to leave the sanctuary. But there are ways to structure that for individuals. But I think we need to be aware that sometimes praise and worship is a very difficult activity for some. But how can we say love you, and how can we get every voice to enter in, no matter what it sounds or looks like? Right? How can our voices join together, even if that voice is a movement or a gesture of some sort? Sorry, again, it's something that we can sign. It's something that we can picture. It's something that we can learn in a variety of languages. Love this. This was, again, a great children's application of this from Cornerstone Christian Reformed Church. They were called the Pebbles, which I thought was sort of cute, the children's ministry of Cornerstone. But Pebbles get in trouble. And clearly this is their writing. It's great. But this is, as a child, they were digesting sorry. So when Pebbles get in trouble, they sometimes say, I didn't do it. This is a picture of Luke when he spilled water, right? Sometimes I don't say I'm sorry because I don't want to be in trouble. And then there's a little girl that says, how about you just say sorry? Clearly, they had these great groups of kids working on this. When we do something wrong, we don't say sorry. This is how we feel. Sad, angry, guilty. Not exactly sure about the crossed out face, but whatever. It might have drawn one too many. But eventually, Pebbles, they always say, I'm sorry. We're sorry. I'm sorry I did it. It was my fault. I won't do it again. I didn't mean to. And again, that was their participation in learning to say, I'm sorry. What a beautiful expression in the children's setting. In the adult setting, they had some artists that were thinking about that within their congregation. And again, the cup was to represent the Lord's Supper, and sometimes that act of saying sorry before you enter into the Lord's Supper, and an illustration of that. So people can access this idea of sorry in a variety of ways, and I think it's just a lovely opportunity. So some ideas that I'm thinking about for sorry. One of the things that I'm thinking about, and let me take one of those pictures, off, had an individual, and sometimes, again, this is an illustration of sometimes we need to think differently about a situation. They were talking about, I'm sorry, and someone came forward who happens to have autism spectrum disorder, and she was pretty insistent that she was having a hard time forgiving, very closely related with this topic, right? And it was a caregiver that she had had in a group home, and she had a pray to forgive Susie. And so the pastor called me, and he said, 38 weeks, she has come forward for prayer to forgive Susie. Every week we do this, and I can't do 39. I said, okay, thanks for being honest. Talk to me about how you're doing this. He said, well, she comes forward. I ask permission to put my hand on her shoulder. That's good, right? I said, yes, that's very important. Good job. But then she tells me the story. We pray. She smiles. She gives me a hug, and then she leaves. But the next week she's back. He said, this forgiveness is not holding. And I said, you know what? Words are not her first language. I happen to know this about this individual. I said, you know, why don't you try this? You have a cross over there on the other side of church. Would you get some sticky notes? Would you write this person's name, this individual she wanted to forgive, on this sticky note and say, you know, when we forgive somebody, we can take that person, we can leave that person with Jesus over by that cross, and then we don't need to think about that person anymore. We're free. We don't need to think about that person. So they did that. And I said, but leave the sticky note there. It's a habit after 38, 39 weeks. She's coming back, but when she does, the next week, just say, oh, but remember where we left Susie. So he did as I said, you know, and they took the sticky note over there, and the next week she came back, and he said, but where did we leave Susie? She looked, and she's like, oh, yeah, and then it was done. Again, sometimes we need to think more broadly, and we need to put things in the language, the first language, and sometimes that first language, we're not talking about English or Mandarin, we're talking about the first language as that being pictures or an opportunity to think about forgiveness in other than words. So another thing that I just want to bring up is sometimes in congregations I have seen us be too, for lack of a better term, tolerant. Forgive me for being that way. I did a session once, and it was called, you know, it was all about showing acceptance. And sorry, I'm just going to tell you what happened because this is a real story from a real congregation. And I called back 6 weeks later. I said, how are things going? And she said, oh, well, okay. So I knew there was a story. Apparently, they had a young adult with autism who was there. And after every worship service, he was walking around and touching women's chests. And they were just standing around accepting that behavior. And I said, no, that's not okay. We need to also say everybody has responsibility to the community. And I said, we can't allow people to have patterns in their life that cause them to say sorry, right? And so that we need to work with that. We discovered that it was only happening after the worship service. This individual was sitting too long. He was overstimulated. So we paired him up with another adult male from the congregation. They left early behind the bar. They started to pour coffee for people and set it out, and that fixed that particular issue. But again, that's part of that piece of sorry. And again, I pulled these illustrations so you could think creatively and broadly around these vertical habits. Why? Oh my goodness. Again, something we could see, we could sign it, we could learn it in a variety of languages. And I think, oh, how important it is to give individuals a chance to enter into a time of lament where we gather together to ask God why. And I'll just give an illustration of this too. I was asked to lead a memorial service for somebody, and you'll hear about this. And one of the things that we incorporated were some vertical habits. We wanted to say thank you for this person's life. We wanted to ask for God's help. We wanted to say why. Why did he have to leave so young? And again, it puts into words that question, and very much as part of the Psalms, thinking a lot about people who've experienced trauma and the importance of allowing people a safe place to just sit in that place of asking why. Certainly, God understands each one of those places and has given us that tool in Scripture of lament. And why don't we have as a Bible memory a verse, something from Psalm 13, to give voice to all of those different pieces that are part of our life? I'm listening again. I'll be talking a little bit more about that, but the idea of how can we build in some of those multisensory ideas? How can we have a idea bank for I'm listening? Sometimes, as I mentioned in universal design, having those key concepts can be helpful. And sometimes we may need to import some really great ideas. When we cover in a few weeks the idea of working with persons who may have an intellectual disability, I have some examples that are part of that. But sometimes we need to adapt some things and pull in some pieces that would allow others to connect with that. Again, as I said, Vertical Habits gives us this universal design language for good avenues for responsive design. So we'll cover more of that in that section, but I think it has some great opportunities for choosing curriculum, choosing adaptations to curriculum, and the like. Stay tuned. We have exciting things coming. I think another area, again, vertical habit, help. And again, there have been some communities that have done some wonderful community work around that petition and the like. So again, sometimes we need to offer that help in specific ways. One of the tools in the back of helping kids include kids with disabilities is just sort of this help guide. If you have an individual and you're doing cutting, here are some substitutions you can make. If you're asking people to write, here are some substitutions you can make. Speaking, coloring, there's a whole adaptation guide. So again, help is something that we can say to God, but help is also something we need to provide sometimes when people are in the middle of an activity that might need some extra help. So enjoy that. Saying thank you again, and what can I do? I'll just back up a minute. I think one of the coolest things that we can do too is to give that voice. And so it was a beautiful thing the day that pastor decided to be bold and wear an apron, right? I introduced this material, but brought it into the worship service. They were saying thank you to God, and they wanted to collect all of those ideas. So in addition to, you know, perhaps offering that texting option, also knew that they could bring this to the individual who had control over her eyes and could stand in front of that person and spread out this far, could say to that person, would you look at what you're thankful for? When you're standing this close, you can tell exactly what that person is thankful for. And, you know, that person chose something and said they were thankful for church. Well, now we can go ahead and we'll add that to our prayer of thanksgiving. So again, when you take the idea of saying thank you, or I'm listening, or saying help, and you can come up with some very specific tools we can use to bring into a worship setting to allow for a variety of ways to respond. Would I always have an apron and those pictures available? No, probably not. That's not a universal design feature, perhaps. But I would if this was part of somebody's plan. So, again, universal design language with responsive design options available. So, again, what can I do? And I would encourage you to think about something else with this. So often, we don't remember to poll the gifts of the people who are involved. And so often, we put people, well, we're going to have our people with Down syndrome service greeters. Well, that might work if they were all gifted in greeting. We really need to get to know that person's puzzle piece. How can that person serve? How can that person be involved in the congregation? Greeting, serving coffee, yard work, office support, making food. What gift does this person bring to this community? So remember that part of what can I do also means that each person is involved in doing something special. So I was explaining Marie earlier, who had a limited ability to speak, but had an absolutely typical IQ. One of the things that we found was interesting with her is the children were becoming afraid of Marie. Excuse me. They were becoming a little bit afraid of her. And so we were trying to think, okay, what gift could Marie offer that would intersect with the children? And so not only did she hold the candy basket at a harvest festival that they were offering, kids could go and pull a piece of candy off her lap from this basket, but then after that they also decided to have her be the holder of the children's bulletins in her lap. So at a certain point during the service, they could go get this specialized children's item from Marie's lap. And she loved it because Marie loved kids, but the kids became familiar with Marie and it was much less fearful. In fact, the next problem was it kept hanging all over her wheelchair. We had to work on that next. But it was this beautiful thing of thinking, okay, how can we use her gifts and also create a community of children who were more comfortable connecting with her and in that setting. Again, back through how we can enter into telling God who He is. Are these things that we can sign, we can say? As we develop this great language of worship, how can we then plant some things in that are not just words only? So that is the trip through vertical habits. There are more ideas, and you will see them in the book that you are reading for this course. But I hope you are intrigued. I hope you're thinking about the possibility of entering into this world of vertical habits and the possibility of access points that this creates for so many different people. So again, the term itself was not thought of in terms of persons with varied abilities, but it certainly, as I listened to this idea of vertical habits, certainly seemed like a really important place to introduce people of a variety of abilities into the fabric of the language of worship. So we'll talk more about that. I hope you have delighted in this chance to think about universal design. For the last couple of weeks, we have made it now through that perspective of puzzle pieces and different parts of that. We've launched into this long thing about universal design and how that can impact children and youth settings along with worship settings. Certainly going to ask you, and as part of homework, to explore some of those features, put something in place that you can take a photo of and send our direction, because really want to learn from what you're discovering. Delighted to see what people are doing. We have found that as we share ideas, and I don't know if you felt that, but to look through congregations and what are they doing, it just allows people to say, look, this is something that's manageable. We can enter into this. I don't need to have a specialized degree to get this done. It's just many of them common sense opportunities, equipments, words that we're using in order to bring access points into the worship, into the education, into the service opportunities and the fellowship opportunities of our congregation. So looking forward to starting into responsive design next week, and looking forward to thinking deeply into some of those personalized plans that are important to allow people to have access to all that happens within a congregation. Have a wonderful day.